a podcast featuring ordinary men of extraordinary faith. This is Manna.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Manna, a podcast featuring ordinary men of extraordinary faith. I'm your host, Jeff Peterson. Now, none of the guys that you're going to meet on this podcast would consider themselves to be extraordinary, but it's their humble, holy way of living. That's exactly what makes them extra to me, and I am excited for you to meet them. So, as listeners of Manna know, I am kind of a word guy, and I don't know if it's because I was good at words, if that's the way you say it, at a young age, or more likely because I was bad at words. For example, I still remember the day my seventh grade English teacher clarified for me the difference between sympathy and empathy, okay? Because I was using both words wrong, thinking I was impressing the other, 13-year-old girls with my compassionate command of the English language. But anyway, she explained back then, which is still true today, as we all know as adults, that sympathy is understanding someone's feelings or suffering, whereas empathy is actually experiencing someone else's feelings, kind of being in their shoes. And actually, now that I think of it, looking back, it's hard to imagine like why I would be finding opportunities to use either of those words in a middle school vocabulary. But anyway, today's guest, okay, who is a full-grown adult, is the author of the book, A Different World, God's Sovereignty in the Face of Suffering. And anyway, he would have been able to write that book with that kind of title as a very qualified sympathizer, okay, because he's a deacon, he's a Christian apologist, so he's got plenty of knowledge and understanding to go around. But it wasn't until he saw his wife and his daughters go through years of illness, being brought to their knees both physically and spiritually from complications suffered from Lyme's disease, that today's guest truly experienced and empathized God's sovereignty in the face of suffering. In the book and in his subsequent speaking and teaching engagements, our guest takes the well-intentioned but sometimes shallow sentiments that we've all said or heard in times of suffering, that whole why do bad things happen to good people? and he goes a lot deeper and a lot more direct about how God and faith factor in and don't just, they're not on the sidelines at all. He recognizes what he calls as the sharp disconnect between an encyclopedia of head knowledge and an application of that knowledge in the muddy and bloody trenches. Oh my gosh. I just love the way this guy writes. As I mentioned, he is a devoted husband and a dad hanging out there in the woods of Maine. Ergo the Lyme's disease there. So anyway, please welcome today's Manna man, Mr. David Libby. Hey, David.
Well, hello, Jeff. Thank you. I very much appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Well, we are so grateful to have you here and to share your story. Now, I have not read the whole book yet, but as I just said, I love the way you write as you immediately immerse readers into the relationship with your wife and then your wife getting sick fairly early on in your marriage, and then just these waves of suffering that just unfortunately just started washing over your family. So take us back, if you would, to the beginning, and when this all sort of like started happening, and then specifically, when did you start realizing that okay, this is actually like we're in the midst of something a little more significant here than just your garden variety, everyone's kind of getting sick. I mean, when did you really start thinking, okay, this is really great?
Yeah. Boy, that does take me back quite a long while, actually. We're going back almost 30 years now. So when my wife and I first met, we were very close friends right away, and remained best of friends after we were married. And we both had similar interests. We loved the outdoors. She had never hunted, but I introduced her to that. But, you know, she also loved fishing, and we loved to garden, forage for wild edible plants. We live kind of a homesteading lifestyle. We were really quite self-sufficient up here in central Maine. And we loved life. We worked hard. We played hard. And we had some very, very good times. But early on in the marriage, I think we had, you know, maybe one really good year before she started to get sick. And at first it was off and on, and not extreme, but we knew something was wrong. And then as time went on, she became more and more ill, to the point where, you know, 10-15 years into our marriage, she was pretty much utterly debilitated, and never quite into a wheelchair, but she probably should have been. You know, she's just so tough, she resisted that. Extreme pain, sick all the time, vertigo, inability to walk, you know, Parkinson's-like symptoms, neurological problems, and so forth. And, you know, the list could go on. But I think to answer your question, when did I reach a point where I thought this is something more grave than just run-of-the-mill sickness? I'd say probably it took a while. You know, I kept thinking, we're going to find what's wrong. And you know, we'd go to doctors and either get misdiagnosed or no diagnosis or whatever. But, you know, they'd give us their pills and so forth. And I think, okay, this will be the pill that fixes it. And, but eventually I realized this is a lot more serious than I had thought. And this is a long-term, chronic, very serious condition. And it probably, I'd say, 7 or 8 years into our marriage.
Wow. Well, and then within that, then didn't you also, as you start having kids, didn't your kids also start getting sick? I mean, this was a part of, it wasn't just your wife, right?
Correct. Yeah. In fact, the kids, my youngest daughter, Bethany, especially, probably was the sickest of all three, my wife second and Kayla third, but all three were very ill. And they showed some signs of Lyme disease early on, but it wasn't until I think my youngest daughter was 15 and oldest was almost 17 that they both really crashed. And so they grew up in their childhood years and early teen years taking care of their mother, and then their health also crashed, and it was, you know, very severe. You know, Bethany was debilitated, and she had a lot of mental illness problems that came along with it. And, you know, the Lyme spirochete is very similar to the spirochete that causes syphilis, so, you know, which causes insanity.
Yeah.
And she had severe seizures, you know, awful seizures multiple times per day. She had a symptom that doctors called sound sensitivity, which was a bit of an understatement. Any little sound, like even the contact of a fork against the dinner plate, would cause her to have seizures, you know, cause her to fly into a panic. And so she spent weeks at a time, sometimes cloistered away in a soundproof closet, and but really, 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 really times of deep, deep suffering. And the girls were desperately ill for probably 10 years, I think. And so now, so the book ends with Bethany still in a clinic in Florida. She spent 5 months in a clinic in Florida that actually saved her life. She wouldn't be here if she hadn't gotten into that clinic. So the book doesn't end with them doing any better, but they are doing better now. I wrote that book 4 or 5 years ago, and then didn't do anything with it until recently. Recently I published it, but so, you know, I thought about going back and changing some things, and I decided not to. But so now they are still ill, but they're doing a whole lot better. Both girls actually are married. They found wonderful, godly men to marry them. They're living out of state. They're all still ill, but not nearly as bad as they were, and we're seeing improvements. Yeah.
Well, and I want to talk about the book in a second, because what I appreciate about what I've read already about the book is that it is a very like I said in the intro, very direct. It's very bold. It goes beyond kind of the Hallmark card sentiments and really delves deep into a lot of the questions that people, you know, come up with when they go through their own suffering or they see, you know, that whole bad things happening to good people. But for you personally, so before the book, so now you're a husband and a dad, and you're watching and you're the suffering going on around you, and you are a man of faith. You yourself someone who follows Jesus and believes. What was it like for you? I mean, I can't imagine the range of emotions in even being a man of faith. Talk about how you were sort of processing all of this, and was your steadfastness in your faith and this belief that, okay, that none of this makes sense right now, but there's got to be a reason for it. You know, I mean, was there a consistent, you know, sort of perseverance as you went through it as a caregiver? Or did you go through phases? I mean, this went on for so long. It's still going on. Have there been phases of your, mm-hmm. not phases of your faith, but just phases that you've been going through as you've been processing all this?
Yeah, I suppose so. So I guess I knew, you know, a lot of the right answers ahead of time, but experiencing it is a whole different can of worms. And the different phases that I've gone through were never really losing hope in the Lord and in a better life to come, but, you know, vacillating between any hope at all here in this life and no hope at all here in this life. Another thing that the suffering really did for me in knowing how to answer the hard questions was it forced me to grapple with them. A lot of the Hallmark card answers, as you mentioned a minute ago, technically aren't wrong. A lot of them are good answers, but they just aren't deep enough. They can be pushed back against a little too easily. Yeah. And these many years of suffering forced me to push back against these, you know, kind of simple answers and, you know, dig a little deeper. For example, you know, we all know Romans 8:28. It's a beautiful verse in scripture and one that we, you know, we all love and should love and should take great comfort in. You know, God works all things together for the good of those who love him and are called according to his purposes. But we often quote verses like that, having never suffered, without having to really grapple with, you know, why is it that God is ordaining these difficult circumstances,
yeah.
you know, for my good? Why can't he ordain, you know, easier circumstances for my good, mm-hmm. and, you know, right. that sort of thing? So we can always push back a little harder and dig a little deeper. And
for you personally, because, you know, just reading your background and you're very like you know, you're a deacon, you're an elder in your church, you're sort of a, I think you're saying you're self, kind of a self-instructed theologian or whatever, an apologist. So you are definitely steeped in both the practice and the whatever principles of faith. Did that come mm-hmm. sequentially? Did that come before all of this? So that as you look back on it, it was it almost like divine preparation so that you could get through all of it and help your family get through it? Or did all of that develop for you during the suffering? And was it a way to make sense of it? Was it a way to get through it?
Well, I think it was actually a little of both. I knew it's funny, you know, my wife was sick even before the girls were. So dealing with suffering was something that we, you know, have always known. It's just always been our life. You know, the girls never knew a time when they didn't have a mother who was really struggling. And, you know, there were times when she was doing better than others. So we still, you know, went on with life, you know, best we could. But there were times when she was debilitated. You know, the girls learned to cook meals when they were, you know, still in their single digits, you know, 7, 8, 9 years old. And there were times when my wife was so debilitated she couldn't walk. So the girls would, you know, when I was off at work, they would, she'd crawl out of bed onto a sheet and they would pull the sheet and drag her, you know, down the hallway on a sheet so she could go to the bathroom and that sort of thing. So the girls always knew suffering. And so I guess it was something that was never foreign to our experience from the very beginning of the marriage, basically, roughly.
Yeah.
You know, we had maybe one good year. So it's hard to, you know, so these answers, you know, knowing the theology, knowing James chapter 1, you know, count it all joy when you face various trials, and you know, texts like the 1 Second Peter, don't think it's strange when a fiery trial comes upon you. Knowing those things ahead of time can help, but it was really in the suffering that I developed a theology of suffering, I guess, because, you know, it's been a part of our life right from the very beginning.
Yeah. What about for the kids? And not that our faith, I mean, as we get old, God willing, our faith matures. I mean, it's a gift. And if we can receive that gift and honor that gift, our faith will grow as we get older. But it's not to say that young people can't have great deep faith either. However, was it harder for your girls when they're both personally going through their own suffering and then also caring for their mom? Was it harder for them to not make sense of their faith, but to understand that even though the times were so dire and so unfair, that there still was a God, you know, and that there still was a loving God, and that even if they couldn't understand at the time why this was happening, that it wasn't about punishment, it wasn't about an absence of God. I mean, how did your girls, when they were younger, you know, were they able to kind of have the same? Did they process it the same way you were able to process it as an adult?
Well, they had their struggles. I guess I'd love to have them here to ask them that question to get, you know, get more clarity. But I know my youngest daughter especially had some significant faith struggles. You know, when she was really doing her worst, she never seemed to entirely reject God, but, you know, she accused him of subjecting her to pointless suffering and that sort of thing. So it was, you know, those were struggles, and you know, we had to work through those struggles, and, you know, struggles that anybody could be expected to have. They've come out of it strong. They both have a strong faith, and they love the Lord and are serving the Lord.
Yeah.
And even before the suffering began to get better, they had developed a very close walk with the Lord. I think suffering seems to have a winnowing effect. It tends to actually draw real people of faith closer to the Lord. And, you know, maybe not at first, you know, it might be a slow process, but they tend to be drawn closer to the Lord, while those who maybe don't have a true faith but are pretending are driven away from the Lord.
Back to the book. I'm interested to understand, as you've now been out talking about the book and people are reading the book, and like I mentioned in your intro, you are also an apologist, an apologetic, which, for those that aren't familiar with the term, that doesn't mean, it doesn't mean David walked around just apologizing for being Christian. It's actually someone who is very learned in the faith and can sort of help others understand what the faith, you know, believes. So my question, as more people have been exposed to the book, are you finding that it's having the greatest impact on people who are of faith, and this is really helping them get even deeper into understanding God's mercy? And not that we'll ever understand the ways of the Lord at all, but are you finding the the reaction has been greater from people who are already, they're already in the game, and this is really just helping them get even more, helping their faith life mature even more. Or is it on with folks that maybe that aren't believers, you know, atheists or whatever, and are coming at it with like, hey, the reason bad things happen is because there's no God, you know, and there's nobody looking out for us. And this book is actually helping people understand that, wait a minute, think bad things can still happen, and we are loved by the Lord.
Yeah, good question. I've gotten some positive feedback from people who are believers, and also from people who aren't. So I know I had somebody tell me just recently how she had a deeper understanding of suffering because of the book, somebody who was a Christian and had a deeper understanding of how it can be correlated with a loving God and so forth, how it can be correlated is probably the wrong word, how it can be reconciled, you know, with belief in a loving God and so forth. So I have heard feedback from people who have said they've benefited a great deal, people who were Christians. I know non-Christians have read it and said they really like it. It's gotten them thinking, but I haven't heard anybody tell me that they've, turned to the Lord because of it. I would love to hear that, but I guess a little of both.
Well, and I think that's why I think it is such a great book, because I think it is one that can help folks develop even further. And I think you can also, just in the way that it's written, being it's so direct, it's so almost prescriptive, that it can also help people get into it and really make them think differently about all types of suffering, not only the most dramatic. So, all right. So here we're, David, we're at the fun segment now of the show. And so this is where we ask the same three questions of every guest. And so we call it the fun segment, okay. Kind of a little tongue in cheek. So I don't know how fun it is, but we'll find out. So anyway, same three questions to every guest, and just hear what you have to say. So keep you on your toes. All right. So fun segment question number one: if Jesus knocked on your door tomorrow morning, found you in the woods there in Maine, knocked on your door and just wanted to hang out with you for the day, okay? It's just you and Jesus. You can do whatever you want. You can go anywhere you want, see anybody you want. You can just hang out together, whatever. Doesn't matter. You can plan your day with Jesus. What are you going to do?
Very good. Good question. I think I would say you are the Lord of glory, so you get to choose. But if he says no, you choose, then I probably would get him this time of year, get a fishing pole. We'll go fishing.
Love it. Well, I'm sure you've got a lot of great, great lakes and great nature up there where you guys live. So that'd be fantastic.
We do. Yeah.
All right. Fun segment question number two: if you could go to church with any other man, okay? So because this is manna, okay? We talk about men of faith. So you're going to go to church with any other man, living or dead, famous or not. You can know him or you don't know him at all. Just heard about him, whatever. Who are you going to church with?
Wow, that's a good question. I could come up with a lot of names. I really love the reformers. They faced very difficult times, and a lot of persecution, and they rediscovered the true gospel, the gospel of salvation by grace alone through faith alone, and they were willing to die for this gospel. And they were willing to fight for it. And it was also a time of burgeoning, systematic theology, where people were diving into Scripture, which had been kept from the people for a very long time. So probably one of those reformers. I'm going to say John Knox, the Scottish reformer. He was a great thinker, a great theologian, and a warrior for the gospel, and a very strong man.
Yeah. Fantastic. I think you'd gather a crowd if you walked in with John Knox. I think you'd have more people in your pew, for sure.
I think probably
for
so.
For sure. All right.
That would be especially true if he carried his Scottish broadsword that he carried in the pulpit with him, because it was very difficult times. They faced a lot of persecution, and he wanted to protect his congregation. So he always had a sword with him. So he'd really gather a crowd, wouldn't he?
He would, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right, great. Well, fun segment question number three. If you could give just one piece of advice to a younger man, so think more like teenager, a younger man, about just, you know, living a life of faith, living a humble, holy life of faith. It doesn't necessarily have to be about getting through suffering, although that might be your piece of advice. But basically, it's just the notion is, if you had one thing that you could impart on somebody younger, a younger man, to kind of just set him off on the right path, what would that one piece of advice be?
Okay, well, I think I will tie it in with suffering, although it could be applied much more broadly. But my one piece of advice would be to seek the Lord with a whole heart, and that does not mean without the mind. You know, we make a false dichotomy often between the mind and the heart. So, you know, you can have all the knowledge in the world, you can study all the big, thick, heavy books on theology, and you know, you can even go to seminary and take all the classes and get straight A's, and you can know the Christian faith inside and out and have no real heart for the Lord. Mm. You can be a wooden, head knowledge only, heartless, type of a Christian who doesn't really love the Lord and doesn't really serve the Lord. On the other hand, you can have all kinds of, love for the Lord, but not really know the Lord who you love. You know, you have to know about him to know him. Knowing about him is not enough. So I would say, really seek the Lord with your whole heart. Make it a heart commitment. And that includes a head commitment. You know, try to take pains to actually get to know about him through study of his word. It doesn't mean everyone has to be a great theologian. We don't all have to be. That's not the point. But the point is, get your faith in God's word. Learn, the basics of Christianity. Learn the Christian worldview inside and out, but also really, really love this Lord. Yeah. If you feel like you lack love for him, then pray for it and ask him. Fast. I would say fast and pray and ask him for it. Seek the Lord with the whole heart. So how this ties in with suffering is when he sends times of suffering, even if they're intense, know that they do come from the hand of God. He has ordained whatsoever comes to pass, and he has done so for a reason. So it's the same God who loves you, who has given you the trials in your life for a purpose. They sanctify you like a refiner's fire, and they strengthen your faith. They store up for you an eternal weight of glory in the life to come, as we're told, as Paul said to the Corinthians. So really seek the Lord with the whole heart, and when suffering comes, that will get you through it, and that will expose to you the purpose that is behind it. That would be my advice, I guess.
Excellent. No, I think that's fantastic. I couldn't have said it better himself, and you've said it in a lot of great words in the book. Again, it's called A Different World: God's Sovereignty in the Face of Suffering. And David Libby, thank you again for being here. Thanks for going through what you've gone through and putting it to the Lord's use in this book and everything that you're doing to help people make sense of their suffering and help others get through theirs. So thanks again.
Yeah, you're welcome, Jeff. Thank you for the opportunity to be on your podcast. I love it. And keep up the good work.
Thank you for listening to Manna. If you have any questions or recommendations for future guests, send them to mannapodcast@gmail.com.